Okay, having looked at the different complexities involved in the projects, how it could impact the delivery of a project and thereby put the business owners in a shape of a spot where they could not justify ROI. So let's now move our focus and attention from the factors that impact the overall failures of a project and how we should be mindful of those to saying that what are the best practices in terms of project estimation. So as we've discussed previously, estimating is critical to a project's success. The more closer or the more accurate the estimate, the better it is for the overall success of a project. And by following a few proactive practices, we can actually improve the accuracy of the estimation. So let's look at some of these techniques. The first technique is to simplify. And what I mean is break a complex structure into something that can be easily understood. So just simplify it to the lowest possible form, and it's a sure a remedy for complexity. So not a remedy for creating complexity, but a remedy to mitigate complexity. So no matter how complicated a project can be, we can always use this one rule to make it simpler. Right, so the rule is to ensure that the project is simple enough, simple for the business owners, simple for the functional experts to create the functionality basis the business need, simple for the coders to actually develop the code. So by no means I'm saying that it has to be simple in the sense easy to code, but what I'm saying is it should have the clarity of thought, and that is what I mean when I say it should be simple. Clarity of thought in terms of documenting the requirements, clarity of thought in terms of using what kind of technologies to be used, etc. So this makes the entire approach simple. Right. Although it could be obviously a complex a functionality that you are trying to achieve, it could be say out of the blue different machine learning model that you are trying to predict, etc. But if you have the things defined clearly, the business objectives defined clearly, the techniques defined clearly, the people who are going to work on that particular tool, etc. If everything is specified clearly, then obviously it'll fall in places because you are using a far more methodical approach. Break the overall or the total scope into smaller chunks, and use a WBS, that's a work breakdown structure, where it is easy to visualize, understand, and manage. You might want to use, say, a phased WBS, that is one phase after the other. So it's a process, or you might use a delivery-based WBS, and ensure that you have the different levels that are accurately defined. Try and get to level 4, where you assign individual tasks to the activities. So that's where you get more and more clarity. Effective estimates come about as a result of process definition and improvement, education and training, good project management, the use of proper tools and techniques, measurements, sufficient amount of resources, and obviously hard work. And using simplification, you can ensure that, and it's a basic step, right? Whenever say you are faced with a complex challenge, try to break it down into simple, achievable objectives. That's what you do even in case of a work breakdown structure, where you define, say, a top level objective and break it down into the different levels. So the idea is you try to simplify that particular problem by allocating resources, allocating technologies to each of the subparts, and then deliver it as it is needed. The second important technique is to be honest and accurate about the numbers. Avoid any kind of guesswork. Now, this is a dangerous statement to make because it says that avoid guesswork, and the entire course is about estimation. Now, estimation does involve some kind of a guesswork. So it's not guesswork as such, but it's ensuring that the guesstimate is provided not basis of guesswork, but basis, say, a sequence of different efforts that are involved in creating those estimates. So it's like saying whenever you go to, say, renovate a house, and you go to architect, the architect gives you an estimate of the kind of efforts that will be spent, or the overall cost that will be spent. So it's not a complete guesswork, but it is based on multiple different parameters. So say things like, what is the high level scope of work? Does it involve civil work? Does it involve plumbing work? Does it involve carpentry, etc., etc.? And then the architect would kind of collate all of these and create an estimate for you. So it's not guesswork, but a approximate measure of the different activities that need to be performed. So if we translate that to the IT ecosystem, right, even here you have to estimate what is the scope of work, get a concurrence from the customer in terms of a sign off of what is required, the business processes, the different tools that might be needed, the kind of software licenses that will be needed, and then arrive at the skills that will be required in terms of the people working on a particular project, and the timelines that will be needed for delivering that particular functionality. And it is absolutely important to get all the right figures. So as far as it is possible, as I said, it is important to avoid guesswork, but state down the assumptions clearly. And even though many project estimates are all guessworks, based on certain assumptions, it is necessary to quantify those assumptions and get a understanding from the customer, saying that these were the assumptions that were the basis of creating those estimates. The assumptions that you have taken, the scope that you have defined, basis some of the assumptions. It's important that the end customers also know about it, and more importantly, they are cognizant of the fact that the overall estimate or the methodology had certain assumptions in place, and these assumptions, if they are clearly stated in the overall scope, which means that the business owners also know about it, and if required, they can make the project owners change some of these assumptions. So you see here what you are doing. Although you are creating an estimate, but you are being honest and you are mentioning the assumptions which form a most important, say, the basis of creating those estimates. So say things like assuming that the customer responsibilities are so and so, assuming that the software has version number so and so, assuming that, say, the hardware is compatible with the particular software approach that has been suggested. So if you put these things as part of the assumptions and get it validated from the customer, it becomes a very key step in ensuring that the project gets delivered successfully. Once all those figures have been set, it is important to consider some error margin as a buffer. Needless to say, whenever you plan for a project, you account for some kind of buffer, and that comes from the 1-2-3 point of estimation. So either you underestimate or overestimate, and the third thing is you take a average of all of these and do a realistic estimate. So say if one particular activity had to be completed and you envisage say 10 hours. So in a worst case scenario, you would expect the particular activity to be completed within say 15 hours. And in the best case scenario, you assume that it gets completed within 8 hours. So you then take a weighted average between 8 hours and 15 hours and then come up with a realistic estimate about when it has to be completed. So with that particular margin, say if you've estimated overestimated, so that means you've already cushioned or you've had some kind of a buffer as far as the overall estimate is concerned. So the important thing is ensuring that the assumption, the risks get captured and the accurate buffers are maintained so as to have the right kind of cushioning to deliver the particular project. An important point while you've stated the assumptions is to clarify the assumptions. So while gathering the project requirements and while communicating it with the project teams, it is important to specify the assumptions, as I have mentioned. More importantly, assumptions that have been discussed with the customer, assumptions should be discussed with your internal stakeholders, be it domain experts, functional consultants, coders, etc. So that everyone is on the same page while you are drafting those assumptions. So for example, while say delivering the scope of a new feature of a particular product, the stakeholders expect a trimmed down version. But on the other hand, the team members think of a full-fledged or a large-scale feature size. So it's important to get those expectations aligned. Important to have the right kind of, how should I put it, a sign-off between both sides of the party. So say if you are assuming that the software would work as long as the customer database is on a latest version of Oracle. If you stated that in the assumptions clearly, which means two things. One, as a software vendor, you are kind of safeguarding yourself against things that are beyond your control. So let us assume a scenario where a customer has their internal database management systems, which are maintained and managed by their in-house IT teams. Now, as a software vendor, if you are given a task of developing a inventory management system which uses the backend Oracle database, so if you've clearly specified as part of your assumption saying that the underlying Oracle database should be as per the latest version, which is 19c, so you've specified that in your assumptions, and say if the customer is currently using say 11c, which is not supported, it immediately raises a red flag. Right. So as a software vendor, you've made your stand very clear, and also it helps the internal IT teams to look at their internal processes, saying that we need to kind of upgrade for this project to make a success. So what you're doing is you've stated the assumption, and more importantly, you have communicated that to the customer so that even they are aware that for a particular functionality, say the inventory management system to get delivered, Oracle database is a key part which has to be configured properly, in this case upgraded to the latest version. This can have a major impact on the overall project. Overall project in terms of first the achievement of the success parameters of the project. So say if the software is not functioned properly to work on a different database other than Oracle, right? So, and the customer uses only Oracle, or say the customer uses say a database called as Postgres SQL, and the software that you are suggesting or the software that you've created works only on Oracle, then it's a clear mismatch, correct? And the project will not go through. So because you've specified it, you've had that internal alignment with the stakeholders, it makes sure that you are in a good spot. So having those assumptions clearly defined, it will have a huge impact on the overall success of the parameters, success of the project in terms of the different parameters like, say, obviously the cost, but more importantly, say the resources that will be needed, the overall time it will take to deliver that, etc. And hence, it is important for every stakeholder to explain the expectations so that everyone is on the same platform. As I said, you've created the set of assumptions, but more importantly, it is the place where you've communicated those assumptions and you've taken a sign off from the stakeholders. The other important factor to look out for is to adapt to the available budget. The overall scope of the project has to be adapted to the available budget. Now, that's a key parameter behind the overall delivery of a project, right? So you've envisaged a particular cost structure of a project, and more importantly, from the overall ROI perspective, it is important that the project gets completed within that particular project, within that particular budget. So sometimes, say, project managers promise that a lot can be done within a finite budget. It is dangerous to promise things that cannot be done if there is not enough money in the project budget. So say if the customer keeps on changing the project scope. Now, changing the project scope means there'll be greater time to deliver that particular functionality. So you might need multiple different people working on the same project, which also means that the timelines get stretched. So in this particular scenario, the overall budget would also get impacted, because more number of people working on the project means higher amount of money that gets spent. It would mean, say, decreased profitability for the software vendor. So more importantly, from the project manager's perspective, it is important to ensure that the project budget doesn't get hampered. Because if the budget gets hampered, that means the ROI, which was envisaged at the start of the project, ROI from the customer's perspective gets shaken off. More importantly, the internal profit matrix for the software vendors are also might get haywire in case the project exceeds the budget expectations. So while defining the project scope and gathering the project requirements, it is recommended not to keep the numbers low, but just to please the project sponsor or the project stakeholder, it's important to set realistic timelines. Don't have extremely low numbers which couldn't be achieved, and then a course corrective action needs to be taken, which could lead into increased overall project budgets. So the whole idea is to be realistic, adapt to the budget limitations, and ensure that the project and the work gets completed within the overall budget. As I said, absolutely critical for the overall success of the project, ensuring that the project gets delivered within the budget that was earlier set. More importantly, from the business owner's perspective, when the project gets delivered in the right kind of budget, means that the ROI justification becomes easy for them. On the other side, for the software vendors, it means that the profitability matrix is maintained within. The next parameter is about including the risks. Now, needless to say, it's one of the most critical parameters to assess what kind of risk landscape it is. If it is, say, a risky project, it is important to have a buffer in terms of time, budget, resources, in case anything goes wrong. And at the same time, it's important not to overestimate these. We kind of discussed this in some of the previous classes, where we said that overestimation is generally suggested, but if a project is overestimated, which means it doesn't help solve, say, the business benefits in terms of the time it takes to deliver the project, hence delays the ROI justification for the customer. So it is important to ensure that the risk get captured, the contingencies are kept. More importantly, the contingencies are known and then provisioned for. So have sufficient amount of budgets, or sufficient amount of time, or sufficient amount of resources allocated to cover some of these risks. Important thing is not to overestimate, but have a realistic risk captured as part of the risk assessment. It is necessary to adopt a risk and mitigation plan, account for the time, cost, and the resources needed to execute those steps. So risk in terms of, say, a new project, risk in terms of a new technology, risk in terms of people or attrition, not getting the right kind of functional resources, domain consultants, etc., etc. But more importantly, have all of these captured, and at the same time ensuring that these are captured as far as the overall estimate is concerned. The other area is to check for overlooked activities. And this is an interesting point that we'll discuss now. So when planning for a project, many ancillary activities such as say internal charges or internal chargeback mechanisms. Say, typically what happens is even within a particular project, you would have, say, within an organization, you would have something like, say, a center of excellence. Now, center of excellence are the set of people who are considered as absolute subject matter experts. Now, these are billable resources, right? Suppose if you need people from the COE, so these resources have to be billed for their usage. But more importantly, these are internal mechanisms. So although it's within the same company, so say if it's a Tata Consultancy Services and there is a project in banking that is going on, say, for one of the smaller banks, and you want a resource from the Center of Excellence team. So the particular banking project team will have an internal chargeback mechanism to get the resource from the COE team, and there'll be certain cost attached to it. So although these are internal chargeback mechanisms, as in internal within TCS, but then important from each business unit's perspective, right? So these are some of the typical costs that get ignored. So I thought I'll keep mention to that. Some of the other things which get overlooked are maybe say things like client feedback, test for the bugs. Now, obviously, whenever before a project gets delivered, it gets tested. But how rigorous is the testing? Has all the testing been done in terms of functionality test, a stress test in terms of the overall load to the system, etc., etc.? Have those been captured accurately? Or once the changes happen into production, that's where you end up with a lot of bugs. So that's clearly a place where, say, the testing gets overlooked, unnecessarily causing delays and increasing cost. And more importantly, it's loss of credibility also. So say some of these activities get overlooked, and once safe get deployed in the live environment, and then you have to do, say, a configuration rollback or a rework of the efforts, then obviously there's an impact on cost, impact on the timeline, but more importantly, it's loss of credibility also. So make sure you include these ancillary activities within your overall project estimation. The other area that we will talk about is to break down the project into smaller parts before the estimation. So while estimating your projects, break down the different parts to evaluate and estimate them separately. Needless to say, you can use tools like the work breakdown structure to do this. Break it down into the smallest possible item that can be delivered, and then more importantly allocate levels to that, and then say allocate different tasks to that. So what you're doing is obviously on one side you are breaking down a complex problem into more simplistic, realistic, smaller parts, and then setting up timelines, cost to each of these activities. The more detailed and precise the individual parts are, the more accurate will be the project estimate, and thereby it will lead to the overall success of the project. So say you have a top level functional expectation. Now you've broken that functional expectation into four different levels. The bottom most level would be, say, the tasks required to be completed along with the associated activities. Now, because you have such clarity of thought, you allocate resources to each of these tasks. You allocate time to each of these tasks, and more importantly, cost to each of these tasks. So what you're doing is you've kind of created a recipe for success, because you've bifurcated a complex problem into smaller parts, and then more importantly put those estimates to each of these smaller parts. So what you're doing is you know what the expectation is, and because you have such clarity of thought, you've kind of created accurate numbers for each of these tasks, which would then turn out to be the realistic numbers when the project delivery happens. List and evaluate each task. So having a work breakdown structure and estimate is something which is not enough. Obviously, you have to go beyond it. So as I said, you have a work breakdown structure in place, but go as granular as possible. There is two ways to look at it. One, if there's a lot of time that is spent on creating the detailed WBS, or you look at accurate forecast when you do a detailed activity for a WBS. So if time permits, it's good to do this, because it gives clarity of thought, and more importantly, for each of these tasks. So it for from a project manager's perspective, you know where you need to deploy people. So say if one particular task requires a subject matter expert who is currently involved in a different project, so say then the project manager then gets a timeline saying that how do you ensure a timeline to this particular phase by say delaying it or scheduling it in parallel with some other phases to ensure that the project manager gets the relevant SME working on that particular task. So what you're doing is after breaking down the WBS into each of these tasks, you've allocated the different project attributes to it. And by estimating each task and the time to get it done and adding it to the total, you can get a much accurate estimate of the overall project.